Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and we have a full house tonight. With me is Aaron O'Brien.
Hello.
We also have three special guests with us tonight from Star Trek Continues and from the upcoming When the Train Stops. We have James Kerwin.
You have two special guests, one mediocre guest.
Okay.
I'll let you decide.
Nah.
He's talking about me.
That's Kipley Brown.
I didn't say that.
You were implying it. I could tell.
And we also have Lisa Hansel with us tonight.
Hi, guys. This is going to be fun.
It most definitely is. Well, thank you, all three of you, for coming on the show this evening. It's great to have all of you.
You didn't introduce Kipley Brown.
Oh no! And it's just that James Kerwin said something, and then Kipley said something, and I'm like, we've got Kipley, and then yeah,
Kipley Brown, mediocre Kipley.
Oh man!
No, we love Kipley. we're getting her tomorrow for Measure of a Man. I can't wait.
Thank you.
It's gonna be a good show.
But speaking of good shows, did you guys see episode 11 of Star Trek Continues? Mind blown, tears shed, heart ripped out.
It was pretty amazing.
I've seen it once or twice, yes.
You can watch it a second time?
I still cried at the end, you know, like when, you know, Kirk's on the bridge by himself.
Oh, that's sad. But, like, I was crying ever since, like, they halfway beam up McKenna to, like, the very end. And then at the very end, I started crying again. And I was at work when I watched it.
There's like no point in stopping crying. At some point, there's just no point in stopping crying because just you're going to have to start again. So just keep going.
It just keeps going. It never stops.
Trek tears. Trek tears are the most bitter.
It was pretty amazing. And I got to just thank everybody here. Just that it's just a wonderful experience that you guys given us for Star Trek Continues. It's just so good.
Oh, thank
you.
Who directed that?
Those couple of final episodes? Some hack?
Todd Hepburn.
Yeah, and co-wrote the episode 11. So,
Mr. James Kerwin.
That was Todd Hepburn.
Oh, Todd. Also I'm Todd. Sorry. Did they? There must have been a typo on the. So yeah, James Kerwin wrote and directed, or co-wrote and directed those last two episodes, which were fantabulous.
Thank you.
They blew me away. Like, especially seeing a two-parter in TOS, because I remember last time you were on, it was teasing that the next two episodes were going to be a two-parter, and I was like, wow, two-parter in TOS? That's never been done before, and it was done so beautifully.
Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's not true.
They cheated with the cage, but that's not really a two-parter. They just split up
the
one episode.
The Menagerie. The Menagerie. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
it ended with To Be Concluded. And then the following week, they had a teaser, which was a captain's log recapping the previous week. And then it said The Menagerie Part 2.
Yeah.
I got to brush up on my TOS.
It's a bit of a clip show, but.
I think of the cage as a one episode, and then they just kind of sandwiched it with some other stuff. So that's why I'm like, yeah, that's one episode, but kind of.
It's still
two.
Great. It's still
it's
great.
It's technically
episode.
Three, if you think about it, with the original cage.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, that's the big question. I mean, is the original cage actually canon or not? Because it was broadcast. It was broadcast in 1988 nationwide. So is it technically canon in addition to the Menagerie?
It's alternate universe.
No, I mean, they could both work together. I mean, there's no reason they are not both.
They kind of changed the context a little bit of the cage.
They changed the ending a little, yeah.
I don't know. I still think the cage is always that was always canon. I never thought that it wasn't canon. I mean, even if they changed the context a little bit in the Menagerie, I mean, doesn't really change it that much to make me go, well, throw that out.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But getting back to Boldly Go, the two part, it just did you guys plan to do a two parter, or is that just the script ran that far that you're like, well, this should be a two parter?
Actually, we didn't. When we got into the editing room, we realized, oh man, we've got way too much material for one episode. So we just like stuck a bunch of padding in there. We added all this stuff with Smith. You know, I don't know. I mean, that was just padding. You know?
So it wasn't integral to the plot at all.
No, no. That had always been the idea. The idea always was that if we're going to end the original series, we need to do it with a two-parter. You know, it had only been done once in TOS, but so many of the more modern Star Trek series had two-part episodes, some of which, like Best of Both Worlds, were, you know, incredibly well-received. And so it was kind of our idea to do an episode 10 that ended on an incredibly tense cliffhanger, much like Best of Both Worlds Part 1 did, and then have that to be concluded up there and make you go, oh, no, I've got to wait. And then because, you know, ending TOS, it's got to be such an epic story. To fit it into an hour, wouldn't work.
Right, right. You know, no, absolutely. So. There's a lot to unpack in that episode. Yeah. I mean, just the setup of the plot, and then actual goodbye of the crew, or you know, them separating from the Enterprise. That's just a huge, you know, story. That's a story in itself. You know, so I mean, there's so much story to tell just with the crew disbanding. So
yeah, yeah.
And I think you guys did wonderful. I mean, you didn't drag it out too far with the crew disbanding. It was enough that you got the emotional weight of it, but also that, you know, they all had issues that they had to kind of resolve on their own after the 5-year mission. So,
right.
Which was wonderful. So I just, wow. It's just great. I always wondered, especially as a younger person watching, you know, motion picture Wrath of Khan, how Kirk got himself into the mess of becoming admiral and hating his life. So,
yeah.
So that was always like, what? How did he get from the captain I loved from the original series, and then all of a sudden, like, he just melancholy.
Right.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And I mean, I don't know how you guys wrote that out or how you figured out the characters like Spock's, you know, emotional leaning to make his he considered a bad decision. I don't know if it was just a mistake, but you know, that kind of idea. I mean, did you guys really think a lot about how those characters made those bad mistakes, or not mistakes, but those decisions to say, hey, we should just, you know, leave the Enterprise and do our own thing for a while?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long process. Rob, Vic, and I each kind of had our own contributions to the story for 10 and 11. I think it was
Rob
around
Sawyer. Just to, in case people don't know, Rob Sawyer.
Oh, yeah. Robert J. Sawyer, creator of Flash Forward, you know, one of the foremost science fiction authors in the world today. He wrote the two-part finale. But yeah, it was, I think, around episode 6 or 7. When Vic and I started talking about an end game and like just the overall arc that we wanted the story to go. You know, we were basically Vic's entire concept of doing Star Trek Continues was to tie TOS into the motion picture and show why, like you said, there was this sea change in the personalities of these characters. Spock, you know, taking a sabbatical to Vulcan, McCoy resigning his commission, Kirk leaving the Enterprise and taking a desk job. I mean, these are things you would never fathom these characters doing, and TMP completely never explained why they did them. And so, you know, we always knew that it had to be something incredibly dramatic and tragic. We knew that we wanted to kind of fulfill an idea that Roddenberry had been tossing around that never officially made it into canon, but he had been tossing it around back at the time, which was all of the other Constitution class ships failed to complete their 5-year mission, but the Enterprise did. So we wanted to show that, and we wanted to have something happen that drove the big three emotionally. And so I'll never forget. I remember exactly where I was standing. I was having this phone conversation with Vic, and I said, "Well, you know what it is, dude." And he was like, "What?" I said, McKenna has to die. It's like, that's what it is. I mean, she's not in the films.
Right.
She has to die. And you've introduced another central character, another senior staff member into the story. You know, we had already kind of laid the groundwork for the fact that she and Spock were developing a close friendship, and to kill her off would conceivably drive Spock to purge himself of emotions and attachments and so forth. And so that was kind of like an initial idea. And then Vic said, you know, I'd really like to involve the Romulans. We'd never done a Klingon or Romulan story, really. And neither of us really liked the Klingons that much, the way they were depicted in TOS. So we thought a Romulan story would be good. But Vic was very adamant that he didn't want the Romulans to be the bad guys. He wanted there to be some other big bad, some huge force that the Enterprise was coming up against that, you know, was unbelievably epic in scale. You know, the greatest threat they'd ever seen. And he didn't want that to be the Romulans. And I said, well, if it's not the Romulans who are the bad guys, then they've got to be the good guys. They've got to be on Kirk's side. So let's figure out a way to do that. And then Rob came in. And when we brought Rob on to actually flesh the story out, he's the one who said, well, let's bring it full circle. Let's do what the other Star Trek series have done, like Next Generation. Let's do what shows like The Prisoner or The Fugitive did back in the 60s, that when they were able to have a series finale, which is tie it back to the very beginning. So let's go back to the barrier. Let's go back to where no man has gone before. Let's go back to the concept of the Espers and have human beings be the ultimate bad guys when their worst natures come out. And that's a really great allegory for the journey that these characters have gone on. So it was kind of the three of us, you know, kind of banged those ideas out and broke the story. And then Rob turned it into the teleplays.
Well, and the other thing is, this is where everything you said is really interesting, but even more interesting is Kipley's character is the original character, well, Barbara Smith, but Yeoman Smith from Where No Man Has Gone Before. Now, was that planned out, or was that just happens the last name Smith just shoehorned in? I was like, what?
Well, they picked me to play that, to reprise that character, because there's a resemblance to the actress.
Right.
James, yeah. Was that you who were like, you look like Andrea Drum? I know, we'll bring back Yeoman Smith, but she's, you know, gotten her
commission. Yeah. Kipley's first episode 3, there's actually a reference to the fact that it's that character, because Kirk calls her Jones, and she says, it's Smith, sir. And that was kind of our way of letting the audience know, hey, this is that same character, just in the mirror universe.
That happens in Where No Man Has Gone Before. He calls her Jones, and she calls
him. Yeah, right. But I I didn't pick up on that at the time. It went over my head. Yeah, it went over my head. So, and you know, I'm a pretty big Star Trek fan and original series fan, and I didn't pick that up right away. So, when it was revealed that you're like, you know, because you're saying how, you know, your character was saying how Kirk inspired you to go get your commission, I was like, wait, what? That's the yeoman from way back when. Yeah. I was like, what the heck? You know, and my mind was exploding. So,
well, it was very serendipitous, I have to say. And I don't mean to, I mean, Kipley should weigh in on this as well, but it was kind of serendipitous the way it happened, because when Vic and I were looking for a character in episode 3 to take the helm, because in Ferris of the Mall, Sulu and Chekhov are both away and we needed a replacement helmsman, we thought it would be a good idea for it to be a female to make Kirk's anger more threatening. And so we brought Kipley on to the project, and originally the character wasn't named that, but then I said, God, she looks a lot like Andrea Drum. What if we just say that's Smith in the mirror universe? And she was only going to be in that one episode. And then when it came time to do the next episode, White Iris, which Vic asked me back to direct for, the way that episode played out was we again needed somebody, a replacement con officer at the helm. And I think it was Casey, actually, who said, why don't we bring back Smith in the Prime Universe? And I was like, well, she was a yeoman in the Prime Universe and she wasn't on the ship anymore. But maybe we can just figure out a way to explain that later on. So we brought her back for episode 4, and then she just, you know, she stayed. She, you know, we did everything we could. I mean, we had the broom. We did everything we could to, like, push her out of the studio, but she just stayed.
I latched onto a shark.
But what's so really proud. Interesting about how serendipitous this all is that when we kind of got ourselves into this corner in the finale where they're up against the Espers, and we were sitting, me and Rob and Vic, were sitting and breaking the story in my living room one night a year and a half ago or so. And Rob said, you know, because I had thrown out some other ideas about how they defeat the Espers and everything. And Rob said, that doesn't work because the threat of the Espers is that you cannot defeat them. The only way you defeat an Esper is with another Esper. Daenor defeated Mitchell. That's the only way they could defeat Mitchell. You know,
right, right.
You have to have your own Esper on your own side. And there's so that means somebody from the Enterprise crew had to have been turned into an Esper during that first journey through the barrier, but maybe just didn't know it. And really the only candidate for that was Smith, because she's the only one who's there from that episode. And she was touching Gary when they went through the barrier and he was uplifted. And so Rob said, let's make her the Esper. She just didn't know it. Now she's the Esper. And she, you know, sacrifices herself to defeat, to defeat Lana. And it also makes a perfect arc for, like, you know, this is this minor kind of Lower Decks character that was virtually ignored by Kirk in the original series. Turns out that that's the kind of person who can really step up and save the galaxy by the end. It's a great story. It's a great arc for that character. And it's a good, you know what I'm saying? It's like it all kind of worked out really well.
Absolutely. Always got to kill off the Lower Decks character.
But it worked out really well. You know?
Yeah, it just fell into place. It was great.
No, I was blown away. I was inspired, and I was like, "Wow, that's just I because like I said, that whole time it I had not computed that that's the same character at the time. So it was even better because it was like, "Oh, wow, that's the same character. Oh my God!" And that now it all kind of like everything linked into place like a jigsaw puzzle, and it was just like that's perfect. So
cool,
well played. Cool.
Very well played. I didn't realize that either. And Aaron's definitely the bigger TOS aficionado than myself. But seeing how it all linked together at the end was like, wow, that's cool. She was there with Gary in the first episode. Got to rewatch that.
Well, I mean, it's also kind of a way of kind of like paying homage to Roddenberry's original vision, because Andrea Drum was supposed to be a series regular in the show. Kind of his whole life. And if you look at the early NBC publicity materials, they're all photos of her and Shatner.
Oh, wow.
And It was very much his concept was you've got the captain, you've got the alien first officer, and then you have this Lower Decks female character who is striving to get the attention of Kirk and the people in command. And he kind of just doesn't really even pay attention to her. But also we can tell some stories from that point of view. And that was actually the original concept. And then Drum left the show to pursue a film career, frankly. And so everything kind of shifted at that point, and they kind of, you know, revised the way they were going to look at it. They did bring Rand on, but they didn't make her a series regular. So it was also a cool way of kind of going back and saying, hey, you know what, this is something that Roddenberry had toyed with and he had never actually got to do. Like the saucer separation, something that he always wanted to do but never actually got to do it. And we wanted to do those things in the finale, you know.
And in Section 31 drop... I love Section 30. Well, it was dropped in Episode 10, but I was just like, yes, I love Section 31 and all its incarnations. So I was so happy to see a Section 31 drop in TOS and Star Trek Continues. That was fantastic. Lisa, can you tell us about your point of view on all this for the last episode? Because we've never had you on the show before. Let's get you up to bat.
By the way, just I won't say it, but Lisa's on screen. Did you see her? She's...
Yes, I saw her in the at Kirk's speech
on the and on the battle bridge.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, he was in the was he in the saucer section? No, the battle.
Yeah,
bridge.
No, she was in the Aug's control bridge. Yeah, yes. Bridge, yeah, in the Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. When I read the script and I read that part, I've always been too busy to be on screen or involved in anything else as makeup supervisor. I just have to be everywhere and make sure everybody's pretty. So when I read the script and I read that part, I immediately messaged Vic and James and said, I want to do that. I want to be that person sitting next to Sulu who separates the saucer section. That's historical. That's the one thing I want to do. And Vic's like, whatever. I actually, we were shooting episode 9 along with parts of episode 11 a year ago, August, actually.
Oh, and
no, 9 was in February.
9 was in February. Oh, I am so confused.
Yeah.
But
they all run together.
So I was in episode 9 in a $20 cheap black wig sitting at the navigation
looking
console.
Looking very sultry.
Why, thank you.
Nick, yeah. We were at the helm together.
We were. We drove the ship and we didn't crash
it. Damn rapid, girl. We drove it lady style.
I'm glad you're setting a better precedent than Troy did.
That was the goal. Yeah, but that was an accident, actually. All of a sudden, we realized that there was nobody to sit in the chair. And James is like, Lisa, throw the wig on. So I did that. But yeah, to be part of that saucer separation scene was kind of just a bucket list item for me that I didn't even know was an item. So yeah, I did that. And then every single person who was on hand that day was in part of the crowd scene at the end of episode 11. You'll see us probably 5 or 6 times if you look closely, because we only really filled up the first 3 rows.
Oh.
So they would shoot it, and then we'd get up and scramble and mix each other up and move 3 rows back and then rinse and repeat over and over. And that's how we got that many people, because we don't have that many people, nor do we have that many uniforms. So
right.
That's how that happened. Movie magic.
Wow.
Yeah, it looked really good. I was really impressed by how great that that scene looked with all the people. I figured it was something like that or some green screen. I was like, I wonder how they did that. It's really cool.
Well, that is the effects wizardry of John Knoll.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
John, if you don't know who that is, look him up, because yeah, he's one of the top effects wizards in the world. Yeah.
Well, I mean, from everything that I've seen so far, I mean, every time I think a scene is real, I mean, like it's a real set. What was the last one when we talked about what ships are for? In the building that they go to for the council hall?
Yeah.
I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that,
that's a cool location.
He was like, no, that's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not real.
It was a high school auditorium, actually.
Well, yeah, that's where the final thing for episode 11 was. But in What Ships Are For, the council chamber was Yeah, that was like, it was like a jalopy of buildings put together, or like a hybrid of a bunch of different buildings that made it new.
Yeah, sorry, I fell asleep.
Yeah, you could have fooled me with that. I had no clue that I thought that was a real building that you guys took a couple shots of, you know. So that's awesome. And like you said, you know, all the other, you know, special effects and digital editing that he does to make everything look so amazing. It's just wow. So
yeah, like when the color started to come on in episode 9, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
It was even better than I imagined it would be.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Cool. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, but Lisa, is there anything else besides flying the ship and is there anything else, you know, background information that, you know, sharing, especially this last episode that's so emotionally? I mean, that what was your takeaways or things that you could relate to us?
Well, it actually relates to both parts 1 and 2 of To Boldly Go. As I mentioned, I'm the makeup supervisor, and recreating the Romulan commander character, actress Amy Rydell. She is the daughter of the original actress from back in the day, Joanne Linville. Amy is her daughter.
Yeah.
And we brought her on, and I got to watch her slowly become this person. And I just kept saying, oh, my God. And she's looking at me like, what is your problem? I just kept telling her, the fans are going to lose it when they see you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's exactly what happened. I run the social media for Star Trek Continues as well. So I'm kind of at the forefront of all of the fan feedback. And it was beyond overwhelming for both episodes to have this character come to life again.
It is so striking. I mean, obviously, she's her daughter, but just the resemblance. And then, like you said, the makeup and, you know, the clothes and everything just brings that character. Like, I wouldn't, if you put them next to each other, I don't know if I could tell which one was which, you know, because.
Actually, yeah, there's a funny story. She took a picture of herself when she was in hair and makeup and wardrobe. And she sent it to her brother, and her brother said, oh, that's cool. Is that the reference image of mom that they're using?
Oh, God. Wow.
That is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Right then and there, I knew my team had taken had done their job. The makeup was actually done by Tom Supernaut, who is a two-time Emmy-winning makeup artist for his work on Star Trek The Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, all of the movies, you know, legit Trek. He's been in there and in the trenches, and he knows it all. And he just knocked it out of the park with her makeup and the wardrobe. Are you kidding me? Ginger Hawley and her team made those Romulan. Those are woven. That material doesn't exist. They created the material for those uniforms. And yeah, that's the kind of crazy that we have on this show.
That's absolutely amazing.
Unbelievable. Awesome. Crazy.
Yeah. Wow. I know just watching these episodes that you guys, your attention to detail is beyond, I mean, anything that most people could even undertake. And I mean, I know it's a whole group of you, but I mean, that everyone is picking up on all these little tiny nuances is just astounding. Wonderful.
Absolutely wonderful.
And we're all very dedicated to detail, I would say, because we love it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just not the same unless you know, that's where it lives. It lives in the detail. If you just do the main things and forget the rest, it sort of rings hollow. You got to feel like it's the real thing in every way.
Yeah, because at that point you're able to dismiss the little details, accept them, and get into the story. And it's all about the story.
Yeah, that's right. You get lost in it. Right. Go ahead, Dave.
Exactly. It's just that, you know, it's all woven all throughout the entire Star Trek Continues, and it doesn't really hit you in the face until episode 10 and 11. And it's like, wow. Just how it all comes together. And it was so beautiful. So I think Michelle was the first guest I had on from Star Trek Continues over a year ago. And she, you know, she's like, it's all going to be connected. I'm like, interesting. I wasn't seeing how it all fit together, and then it all fits together absolutely beautifully.
Yeah, it definitely.
Yeah,
does.
It was masterfully done. I'm so in awe of James and Vic and Rob Sawyer and everyone who just made it what it is.
Yeah, and that one of the great things for me, because seeing Vic in the motion picture uniform, I know a lot of people hate that uniform, but I love that uniform. I never had a problem with it. It's just that it didn't get as popular as the maroon uniforms later on. But I mean, that was just such a cool like connection that we see that, you know, he was like, he says, yeah, everyone's going to be getting this uniform in the next little bit. So that was even cool too, just to see that the character dressed like that way.
And then
that was another moment on set when he came out in his motion picture pajamas, we called them. I remember the makeup room is kind of tucked off behind the production office. So it's like the last room. If anybody's coming into makeup, that's where they're headed, because there's nowhere else to go. And I heard Vic like out in the hallway, "Where's Lisa?" And I'm in here. And he walked in, and I literally dropped the brush that was in my hand.
Wow.
He had his hair done back a little more, even, you know, because he didn't have that little Kirk flip in his hair in the front.
Yeah.
In the motion picture. So he, even to that level of detail, thought, okay, this is where we're going to take this.
Yeah, it's so perfect. It just really is. And it's just so cool. I mean, you know, like the Enterprise are going to get refit and all that stuff. And so it's just so cool. I mean, a guy like me just geeks out. So that's what's wonderful about it. So I can't thank you enough for giving me my geek out moments.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. And it's so faithful. And I love that little like nod out to all the ships lined up with the Kelvin there and the Discovery there. It was great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, cool, that was great.
That everything fits.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had to sorry.
No, go ahead, James.
No, I mean, you know, Vic kind of said, you know, it'd be great if Nagura's way of indicating to Kirk that the ship is going to be rebuilt and showing him what it looks like is just to point to a series of ship models on the back wall that Kirk can walk along and finally see the refit Constitution class at the end. because that kind of evokes, you know, the golden ships in the conference room on Next Gen, and the ships on Admiral Marcus's office in Star Trek Beyond, Star Trek Into Darkness, and things like that. So we said, you know, let's do that. But then we kind of had to think of, you know, I mean, we couldn't do like the Enterprise D or Deep Space Nine or Voyager or anything like that. We wanted to pay homage to the various incarnations of Star Trek, but we had to stop with 2270, you know. So we kind of thought long and hard about which ships we should include to represent the different incarnations and the different eras kind of Starfleet. And that's what we settled on.
And I noticed there's the Discovery in that pantheon of ships as well. So that was kind of cool to see.
Yes, so which was, and that episode was shot over a year ago. So we were pretty darn sneaky figuring out how to get the Discovery in there long before the show was out.
Yeah, so, I was like, wow, how do they do that?
Yep.
That was cool. It was really neat to see. Dave, do you want to say something?
I actually got reached out to by someone working with Lisa about coming on the show to talk about When the Train Stops, which James and Kipley spoke with us when we had them on last time, just as a tease. But there's an Indiegogo happening at this very moment for When the Train Stops, and we'd like to hear what you guys have to say about When the Train Stops, because I'm excited to hear, but since you guys are collaborating with a lot of the same people as Star Trek Continues on this new project.
Yeah.
We are, yes. It's pretty typical, I would say, in the entertainment industry that when you find a group of people that you work really well with together, you stick with them. When one project ends and another one comes up, you start thinking in your mind, okay, who do I want to get for this or that, or, you know, as far as crew or talent, and you're going to always dip from the same well. If you know that the team worked well together and you put out quality stuff and you enjoyed working together, and we definitely do. So I was approached by Diana Hale, who is the wife of Michael Forrest, Apollo, in our first episode, Star Trek Continues' first episode, and also in Who Mourns for Adonais. We routinely go to their place for Forrestinis. And a Forrestini, you guys will love this. A Forrestini is a martini made by Michael Forrest.
Ooh. And Dave's there. Dave's there for sure.
Can I sign up?
But the ingredients can change. As long as it's made by Michael, it's a Forrestini, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's whatever he has in his kitchen, but it's still a Forrestini.
I'll drink it. Sign me up.
So ever since he was a guest star on our first episode 5 years ago, we've gotten together with them, their family. So we get together probably monthly and have Forrestinis and catch up. So recently we were doing just that, and I was about a Forrestini into the evening when Diana turned to me and said, "We want you to produce a film." So I said, "Okay." It was written actually by Diana's sister, Bernadette Hale. She has had a long career writing and also as a reader for a writer's agent in Hollywood. And she sold scripts to CBS. She's written lots of, you know, theatrical plays as well. And she's very, very good at what she does. And she had written this short film with one of the main characters with Michael in mind to play it. And so she gave me the script and I read it and I loved it immediately. And I started thinking of, you know, who the other characters, the characters really, as they came to life for me as I was reading it. And I started thinking, who else would I want to play the different characters? And also we were, you know, our third choice was James Kerwin to direct. So
third choice. Woo.
Yeah.
Oh, he can't hear this, right?
I think he's on the call.
So we got James on board through blackmail. And we have Vic Mignogna. Our Star Trek Continues Captain Kirk, Vic Mignogna, will be playing Sheriff Crow in When the Train Stops. And John DeLancey will be playing a character called Jason Booth. I don't want to give too much away, but it's kind
not
of like
Q,
a
you guys, not Q. He's not going to be Q. okay? Just so you know.
Oh, you're not going to be cute?
Not like you.
But he could be, but we just don't know because he doesn't reveal
not
himself.
Not necessarily right? going to play cute.
Oh. It could
working
be.
Working out the contracts now. Just kidding. So, John, you know, I got to know him from our ninth episode of Star Trek Continues, and he spent a lot of time in my chair being painted orange. So I approached him, and he absolutely sent me the script. I'll read it, and he was on board. And then Kipley Brown will be playing Deputy Karen Blake.
Much to James's horror.
Woo! Kipley!
James will get over it. And another character is probably one you haven't seen too much of. His name is Darren Jacobs. I've worked with him on a couple of projects, and he's straight out of the Royal Shakespeare Theatre in London, and he's amazing. And he came to Hollywood, and he's you know, just like every other actor, struggling to find roles and work. And he blows me away. Every time I see a performance of his, I forget that I'm working. I just get into the story, and I can't, you know, his performances just are staggering. So I cannot wait for everyone to see what he can do in our film.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I have to be like actually try to be a good actor in this too?
Well, this
man.
There's no point in, you know, and try, you know, I mean, that's pie in the sky, Kipley.
Especially with bad directing. I mean, what can an actress do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You're right.
Oh, man. Don't cut yourselves off at the knees.
You got schooled, son.
So
it's a day ending in Y.
So yes, for one of the train stops, I mean, is everything already filmed, or is it or is there still production being done for this?
Oh, yeah, I filmed it all. It's done.
Anyone mentioned it's a short film. Just okay. You know, it's not a feature length.
It is a short film. James shot it on his iPhone. Just
I shot it on my iPhone, yeah. Uh-huh.
We're in pre-production now, where, as you mentioned, we have an Indiegogo campaign. Go to Indiegogo and look up When the Train Stops. We are currently 56% funded, yay, with about 20 days left to go. Yeah. And once our Indiegogo will wrap up on December 5th, I believe it is, and then we can actually really dive in and get our location set, get everything needed to begin production. And that's the fun part. I can't wait for that part.
That'll be great. And the link for the Indiegogo will be in the show notes below. So if you find the show, look for the show notes, and there'll be a link right in there to find their Indiegogo, or I'm sure you can easily find it just by typing into a Google search, When the Train Stops, Indiegogo.
And just go to whenthetrainstops.com, and there's a big button right there on the front page that says donate, and you go right to Indiegogo.
So. Or that too. That works.
Yeah. In case anybody doesn't have the show notes in front of them, whenthetrainstops.com.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we try to make it easy.
If you want to know sort of the flavor of it, it's because here's a bunch of sci-fi nerds making something, which in this case isn't so much a space adventure. This one is more like the Twilight Zone.
Like a psychological adventure.
Yes. Yes
I like
yes.
the psychological.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, a little bit of a twist there. We did a preliminary table read that brought it in at about 15 minutes. It's 17 pages long. Of course, it's hard to tell at this point before it's filmed how long it's really going to be, needs to be edited. And
I will be drawing out my lines for as long as much
as always.
Time as I can possibly get. I will be speaking extremely slowly with a bunch of unnecessary pausing.
Chewing on the scenery.
Absolutely.
You got to do your accent that they didn't use for Star Trek Online.
The Transylvanian accent.
Exactly, the Transylvanian accent.
Lisa, can I?
Can't she? I love her Transylvanian accent. It's brilliant.
That's between you and James, quickly.
James can't. No, he never left me. Come on. He only ever wants to be, like, good at it or, like, do service to the actual script, whatever.
She could be from Transylvania. Who knows, right?
Yeah. That's right. I'm from Transylvania, living in the southwest of America.
It could happen.
And I am a deputy.
I'm just saying, it could happen, James. This could happen.
I mean, we it look for the best blood. Deputies. And we'll bring them in from anywhere, even Transylvania.
Transylvanians could be American cops. Why not?
And she's a deputy, but she still wears a cape. So
absolutely. I turned into a bat at one point.
Well, don't
right?
they all?
Yeah, of course.
thought they did.
Well, she's the perfect spy. If she can turn into a bat at any time, she can just hide on the wall.
Right now, as I speak to you.
And when you turn in your bat form, you just have to say, "And away I go," like that, and it's.
Guys, you're giving away spoilers.
We're figuring it out. We haven't even read the script, Aaron and I. We're just riffing it.
Oh man,
that's the twist. That. Kipley's a bat.
Yes,
bat. But actually, I'm a baseball bat. If you were thinking like a flying, like you know, rodent. No, I'm a baseball bat.
Damn it! Now you gave away the final twist.
I'm a Louisville Slugger.
Like Lucille, with all that chain wrapped around it.
Oh,
ooh, yeah.
You had to bring it to that.
Well, if we're talking about bats, we might as well bring out the meanest one.
Ugh. I don't like that guy. He gives me nightmares. But this is going to be cool. So I am excited because, you know, there's been on my mind lately that there's so much good content people are producing and they're just doing it on their own, like you guys are doing, and you're not like waiting for anybody to give you a green light. You're just like, hey, I got this great script. Hey, I know this great production crew. Hey, I know a director and I know actors, and you guys put it together yourself. I mean, obviously you did this with Star Trek Continues, but you know, with this next film that you're putting together, it's just such a cool thing that's happening. You know, for people like you that are so creative and just have these brilliant ideas. So I just think, I mean, is there anything that you, I mean, obviously it has more of a burden on it as well, that you have to do so much work and do all the promotion and get all the funds together. But is that liberating for you, or is it just another song and dance as well?
Well, the sad reality is that in this day and age, the industry is, sorry.
Break someone's neck?
Yeah, what's going on? Coming from me. That wasn't from here. But the sad reality is that the industry, there's so much going on now. It's not just, you know, television and movies anymore. There's all kinds of alternate media. And I mean, it used to be a time when you could watch every show that was on TV because there's only so many channels. And now there's just so much content, so much stuff. And it's hard to be noticed. If you have an idea, a script, if you're an actress, if you're a writer, a director, anything, because the industry is saturated. Everyone in the world who wants to work in it comes here, and it's just it's almost more of a lottery. It's just you have to get lucky at some point.
Yeah.
And this, to me, I find this empowering because it means, like you said, you don't have to wait to be tapped on the shoulder and say, "Okay, we'll give you a chance to make something, you know, good." You know, you have to forge your own way.
Go ahead.
If we were waiting to be greenlit, this would never happen. Probably never happen. So
there's millions of projects waiting to be greenlit, you know, and how do they find you? How do you stand out?
Exactly. And there are platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo where you can, you know, if you prove yourself, you can, you know, get yourself funded. And the technology is there, and the online platforms are there, so you can self-distribute your product when you're done with it as well. There's just no limit anymore, which is awesome. I think it's awesome, and it really makes for a good pool of content out there because you know it's up to you. It's your skin in the game. Get in there, make it yourself, get it out there in the world, and you know, no one is holding you back.
And, you know, we can take risks too, because you guys, I'm not going to rant like I did on your show last time, but
I actually want to have you back for a special rant episode.
For a special ranting show.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems like there's a prejudice in Hollywood against good writing and good scripts,
Yeah.
Or if the good
you did rant about
through,
this quite a bit.
Yes, if the good scripts get through, then they get meddled with to make them the formula that they think that the dumb American public wants.
It's happening in video games too, quite honestly. Like everything's being played so safe and so formulaic that it's getting stale. And it's happening all media.
And the content, like the content is so sleek and well done and like 5 stars for production value, but they drop the ball on the story.
Where it counts.
Like I just said, that's what it's about. Yeah. And so we can take a risk like having one, you know, a story versus Hollywood will be like, here, let's just throw some guns in there and some lasers and a lot of CGI and get some
Transformers. Wait.
Yes. But and then, you want character development? Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, we can make a giant dinosaur change into a truck. Is that character development?
Totally, man. It's an arc. It's a character arc.
Yeah, it takes like 10 seconds for it to change.
Yeah, it's like, but it's like hard for him, kind of. You know, you can tell just by the way he groans a little, squeaks. Maybe he just needs oiling. I don't know.
But you guys definitely have shown with the Star Trek Continues that you guys have a passion for a good story. I mean, everything that you guys put out, there's hidden, not hidden, that's the wrong word, but there's many layers to any of the stories, any of the episodes that you've you know, put out there.
Well,
so
Aaron,
it's not just,
Aaron, just hidden to you and me.
Yeah, well, I can't even get into my car door with my keys. So, I mean, obviously you're showing those, you've showed your prowess that way. And, you know, with this next, you know, when the train stops, this film and everything else that you guys are hopefully do more in the future, that your stories are just wonderful and thought provoking. And that's what I'm expecting this one to be, because that's what you've shown me so far. That's what you're doing. And I think you're right, Kipley, that Hollywood just wants it so like cookie cutter and so homogenized and just like, oh, okay, I get this again, you know? And it's just like, it used to be, you go see movies and you get a point of view or see a story that just totally like opened your eye to a different world or a different feeling that you never would have had before. And we just don't get that too much anymore.
Yeah. And you know, like if they do have a point that they're making, like a moral point, they kind of beat you over the head with it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like in Star Trek, the original series, you know, Roddenberry showed both sides of an issue and let you decide. And that's what I hope I mean, that's what I tried to do with the teleplay of episode 9.
Yeah.
Was not beat you over the head with a moral, like, oh, this is what's right. We know what's right here. We're telling you what's right. It's no. This is this side. This is that side. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, you
and
did.
I thought. And that was so well done. And I was like, when I was watching, I was going, yes, that's what it's all about. You know, and I understood that context that was, you know, putting out there. So, I mean, it was really well done. And
absolutely,
you know, when the train stops, like you said, it's a Twilight Zone type of short film, but it's still going to be, I know the story, like Lisa said, if she read the script and just blown away with it, then I know it's going to be a kick-ass story.
Thank you. Yes. We are kind of a little bit ahead of the game coming out of the gate with this new production, because we do have the body of the work at Star Trek Continues as a proof of concept for what we're capable of. People already know what we can do and that it's going to be worth watching. So we're a little bit ahead of the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
absolutely.
But that's cool. That's really good.
It's like basically like an 11 episode resume of just awesome.
Exactly.
He's just like, you know, awesome.
So, Lisa, you were saying that you're about 55% funded as of the date of this recording. How much time you guys have left?
I believe we have about 19 days left.
Yeah.
And we've just added some new perks. I added a perk that is a makeup mentor class, actually. It's a 30-minute video chat with me about you know, beauty makeup or prosthetics, special effects makeup. You want to be a zombie for Halloween. We'll do a video chat and go over, you know, all the tips and tricks you're going to need.
And I need to work on my contouring. Can you help me with that?
I have got you.
She does it all, guys.
That's right. It also comes with like a month of email, like back and, you know, do you take what you learn from the video chat? You go and try it out on your little brother. And then you send me pictures or video and I'll go, oh, a little more blood, you know, a little less latex and you're there. So that's kind of a cool perk.
I want that.
You got it, girl.
This whole film that you guys are putting together is sounds exciting. I love, like Dave said, the psychological stories that are just like Twilight Zone type of feel, that you're just like, you get these twists and these interesting endings that you go like, what? You know, so that's and I know you guys do that a lot, you know, especially just talking about, you know, the To Boldly Go Part 2. We got all these little twists at the end that we did not expect, so... I just know your crew is going to blow us away.
Yay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your faith in us.
Oh, yes. And the psychological things are great. I love a movie that makes you, or a show or something that makes you like stop and you can't stop thinking about it once it's over. It's like, what did that mean? Or like, how did that happen? And it's great to be able to think about stuff and analyze things and talk with people about it on a philosophical level.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what good entertainment should do. I mean, there's nothing wrong. Here I go again. There's nothing wrong with like big budget, cool effects and stuff like that. Like, you know, space battles and all that. There's nothing wrong with that. Unless that's all it is and there's no story to make it matter. What, you know, if you don't care who wins or dies or loses or, you know, what's the point? But, you know, if you can walk away going, wow, I connected with that.
Well, remember you used to go see movies and then you go out with your, like, after you saw the movie, you'd go with your friend and you'd, like, you know, have, like, you know, something to eat or a cup of coffee and you'd just be talking about if it was really awesome film. Like, you deconstruct it and you'd get, like, really into it. I don't do that anymore. Like, I go see a movie and go, like, oh, I guess the good guys won.
Well, we did that one time in the parking lot.
Yeah, we did that one time. But that
was... or if you're me, you go and you...
That was different, Dave.
What did you doing in the parking lot?
Never mind.
We talked about Star Trek. We talked about a Star Trek movie in my car on my recorder. It was funny.
Was that all?
We smoked up the windows. People were checking on us.
Those records are sealed.
Car windows fogged up by the time you were done?
No, 10 minutes in, they were fogged up.
All right. Now that's passionate Trek stuff.
Yeah. That's a movie I would watch.
In the parking lot after the movie. Yes. Me and Aaron can shoot it for you. We'll get that to you ASAP.
No, nobody wants to see that. Nobody.
Can write the script.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go. And you will have character development. There will be a plot. Even the fog on the windows will have a background story.
Wow. This is interesting.
That's deep.
That used to be a thing. Like, people would go see movies and be like, wow, you know, that character when they said this. I mean, this is the only thing that's literally, I finished watching season 3 of Twin Peaks, and I've had multiple deep conversations with people about that, you know, and it's like, that's probably the last thing I really had deep conversations with people about, like a movie or a TV show, other than, oh, the good guys made it, or do you think they're going to live for next season or something like that. So.
I would say that Blade Runner 2049, I was able to have complex conversations about that.
Yeah.
That one surprised me in a really good way, you know, because it had all the big budget stuff, but also a really interesting, complex story that was a good, great, you know, as opposed to, and wait for it, Alien Resurrection.
Covenant. Oh, man.
I thought it was Covenant.
Which was terrible. With my apologies to Ridley Scott, because I don't think it's his fault. I think that they hijacked it.
I'm sure they did. Yeah, absolutely.
You could say that was the best of both worlds, Skipley?
Yes, I could say that very much so. Yes, I like it.
Are we well, going
to start dropping in all like Star Trek Next Generation
titles?
Yeah. Oh, you've just made my inner light shine.
Oh, man.
Does When the Train Stops have a schizoid man?
Oh, yes, there you go.
Wow.
Are we getting derailed?
Oh, man. Yes.
And then Firefly
train
episodes.
Puns and Trek puns.
The train job.
Train Trek. That's it. That's a perfect crossover.
So yep. Should I call this episode To Boldly Go When the Train Stops?
How about you can call it whatever you'd like.
Stop. when the
to boldly stop the train.
To boldly stop the train go.
Oh man, that's just confusing. My brain is broken.
A little bit of Yoda speak in there, since Go wasn't in the earlier. But I was actually speaking with James the other night, and he's also said he
wanted to... Wait, what?
No, yeah. We've spoken off the podcast. Shockers.
What?
Was that your doppelganger?
That wasn't me. That was my twin brother.
Who was I talking to?
It was the dew on the window.
The fog on the window in the parking lot of a movie theater.
Yes, yeah.
We were talking and the other night, and we got into a little bit of a conversation on RUR Genesis, and he was letting me know that he himself and Kipley are going to start pushing that in 2018.
Well, yeah, there are some developments on that you can stay tuned for next year. Right now, I'm focusing completely on finishing up a couple of behind the scenes videos for Star Trek Continues, and then doing Train early next year. But we've got some cool RUR stuff that looks like it's going to happen next year as well. So kind of going back to revisit that.
That's awesome. You didn't tell me that. That's great.
Oh, I got the inside scoop.
Oops. None of your goddamn business, Lisa.
Oh wow.
I just said the S word. Sorry.
Oh, you can say whatever word. You can say whatever word you want, Kipley. Oh man. So I absolutely adore the RUR short. I've probably seen it a dozen times.
Thank you.
I need more RUR Genesis in my life. So once there's more news on that, I want you back on here so we can talk about that news, because I want it. I need it.
And your viewers can see the short as well if they go to RURfilm.com.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting thing because we made that short film in order to develop it into a feature about 4 years ago. And that was when, because Vic is in the short as well, and that was when Vic first asked me to come on to Star Trek Continues. And we ran into some complications turning RUR Genesis into a full feature. And so kind of put that on the back burner for a few years. Focused on Star Trek Continues, and like I said, now focusing on Train coming into this next year. Looking forward after that, that's kind of my next thing to knock off. And I will definitely keep you guys informed as to the things that are happening with it, because hopefully, fingers knock on wood, there are some pretty cool things. Some good timing is falling into place right now, so we'll see.
We'll get to see Kipley with some cool laser rifles.
Yes.
Well,
Well,
subject to contract negotiations. Yes.
And laser bats.
Laser bats. I turn into a laser bat.
There you go.
Yes. Absolutely. Very cool. Absolutely fantastic. Lots of great things on the horizon now that Star Trek Continues has come to its conclusion, and we've got When the Train Stops and hopefully RUR Genesis in our nearest future. And that is so very exciting. Everything I've seen from these guys, it's been absolutely amazing. You guys do beautiful work in all its incarnations. I actually watched yesterday was a lie a couple months ago. That was another beautiful film that James directed and Kipley was in. I highly recommend you guys check that film out as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yay.
All right.
Is there anything else that y'all would like to go over with about When the Train Stops?
Folks can follow us on social media.
Yeah.
We are on Facebook, whenthetrainstops.com, also on Instagram by the same handle. And on Twitter, we are at WTTSmovie. So please follow us because, you know, it's fun.
So we can
sharing
get
is, get sharing, on sharing the is train, caring. Y'all.
All our updates.
All aboard, y'all.
All aboard. So where can we find all of you guys on the social media?
You're going to find me on Facebook, but I haven't checked it in like 4 years, so I should just take my account down. Wow. Kipley speaking. I'm afraid of Facebook. But I am on Twitter. And I think I've, since 2011, I think I've tweeted 128 times, guys.
That's pretty good.
I am pretty active, but I'm, my God, what is my handle on Twitter? Either at Kipley Brown or at Kipley.
No, it's at Kipley Brown.
Okay.
And you have a website where you have some of your art and whatnot. Cool.
And that's Kipley.com, Kipleigh. com. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Thanks for the name. Thanks for the spelling.
Okay.
It's a really weird name, but I own it now.
No issues.
Yeah, you just got
it. No, actually, I actually appreciate it now. When I was a kid, though, yeah, I was like, no, I want to be Caitlin. Oh, no.
You could never find those mugs or keychains with your name on them.
No, that ship sailed along.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic. How about you, Lisa?
I have so many Lisa mugs and Lisa keychains. On social media, you can find me on Facebook, Lisa K. Hansel. Also on Instagram, Lisa K. Hansel. And I only tweet via the Star Trek Continues account and the When the Train Stops account because I'm pretty much social media overloaded.
Gotcha.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, makes sense. Perfect sense.
And James, you can't find anywhere.
Nope.
He's incognito.
Yep, that's right. No, you can find me at VICMIGNOG.com on Twitter. And
Well, that's an interesting way to spell James.
It's Gaelic.
No, just James Kerwin on Twitter and on Facebook. It's the handle's the same, just my regular name, or JamesKerwin.com.
Where all the magic happens.
Yep.
Well, the show you can find at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@Yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can find us at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan. Aaron is at Blackbird2004.
And hey, if you have a chance, go on to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. Give us preferably 5 stars and say nice things about us, because we would say nice things about you if you weren't in the room. Also, if you have a chance, we can go to our Patreon, Patreon.com/Synthaholics. If you have a buck a month, what's that to help us give you great guests like we have here? We have with James and Lisa and Kipley. So what more could you ask for? So $1 a month.
Could ask for cocktails.
You could, but it's hard to send that in the mail.
You know what? You know, speaking of cocktails, you can actually go to our YouTube channel and watch me make cocktails. I will show you how to make different drinks. I actually made one in honor of Star Trek Discovery, the Spore Drive. My invention. It sparkles and shines and does all these cool things.
That Spore Drive is pretty cool, man.
And it'll hit you hard because it's got Everclear in it. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I have not made it, but I watched it, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, Dave makes some good drinks. I mean, tonight I'm not with him in the same room recording, but most of the time he gets me trashed by the end of the podcast. So,
well, I do end up making a 6-shot Long Island iced tea, which is fantabulous. 6 shots of liquor before you add the other stuff.
Wow. Is that what happened in the car in the parking lot after the movie?
No.
Sort of.
That was during the movie. What happened in the car? Yeah.
It's like the whole hole in the popcorn bucket thing. I mean, come on. Chappelle Show.
Oh, no.
Did you give him a Cosby cocktail?
Oh, no.
Oh, ow.
Oh, too soon.
Absolutely.
What happens on rice stays on rice. Just get that little organ out. And
yeah. That's how you get your anonymity.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Aaron, for joining me. And thank you, guests, Kipley, James, and Lisa. Thank you for coming on and spending some time with us this evening to talk about Star Trek Continues, When the Train Stops, and Are You Our Genesis. It's been so great getting to talk with you all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome, guys. Thank you. Thank you
for putting up with us.
Well, no, geez.
You guys are awesome. The bickering is great. It makes us feel right at home, Aaron.
Yes,
it does. We are really just like a family with all the parts that come with a family, including like bickering and fighting and loving each other and then group hugs.
We love you guys.
We love you.
Not getting my Bud Light. But I will make a cocktail for you, most definitely.
Send it in the mail.
Yeah, in an envelope.
Looking forward to the boldly go cocktail and the train cocktail.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll be working on those.
You got
soon,
a mission.
Hopefully.
You have to work on the alien resurrection cocktail, and it's got to be terrible.
Oh,
like it looks like there's alcohol in it, but there's not.
Oh, ooh. It's just cranberry juice.
You should work on something that you're not. Yeah.
You guys need to make a Lieutenant Smith cocktail from, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, it's got two big glowing orbs on it. And then it also has her eyes.
Great.
Oh, man.
Wow.
and a big blonde hair coming out of it.
Oh man,
it helps strain the liquor. It's great. Well, no. Thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. And we'll blow shit up, pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever
had. Awesome. I didn't know we were recording.
No. No.
I thought the show was over. Right.
It was like a hair away from being over, and then stuff just started happening.
Great job, too.
I mean, Aaron and I will do that ourselves sometime, where we're like, oh, yeah, we're done, and then we keep talking, and then, oh, yeah, no, we're done for real now. Yeah, so it happens.
No big deal.
That's when the good stuff happens.
Absolutely. When you think the mic's off.
It's when the best stuff happens.